Pleasure to introduce our first speaker this afternoon. It's Henning Andersen, and he will speak about the rigidity of tilting modules.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the organizers for inviting me here and for the opportunity to to give this talk, which will be on rigidity of tilting modules. So I want to explain both these concepts in case you're not familiar with them. So what I want to discuss is the finite dimensional representations of quantum groups. So I want to take today a complex rule of unity. I'll call it Q. So this will be my quantum parameter. And corresponding to this one, I want to consider a quantum group, which I'll denote UQ. So this is a deformation of the enveloping algebra for some, say, simple Lie algebra or complex numbers. And it's constructed, so this is the Q group, constructed from the generic Q group via Lustig's divided power, quantum divided power. So there's a recipe for doing this, and I don't want to go into this, but I do want to look at the finite dimensional modules for this. So so CQ, the category CQ, will be the finite dimensional UQ modules. And quite a lot is known about these modules. So, for instance, the simple modules have the characters of those are unknown. So, I guess I need a little more notation here. Let me denote by x the weights, the integral weights, and by x plus the dominant weights. So all this corresponds to some simple Lie algebra, as I said, and this Lie algebra has a root system sitting inside x, and corresponding to this one and some choice of positive roots, we get some dominant weights. And now, if we take such a dominant weight, we have several modules associated to it. The most important one may be the irreducible module. So this is a way to classify the irreducible modules. There is one corresponding to each dominant weight, just as in the classical case. And this this simple module can be realized as the unique simple quotient of a Wahl module, which I'll denote by delta Q. So this is the Wahl module, and there's also a dual Wahl module, which I'll denote by Knappler Q of lambda. So LQ lambda is the unique simple submodule of the dual Wahl module. And then there's a fourth module which is also associated to lambda and which is one of the main players in the talk today, TQ lambda. So this is an indecomposable tilting module. In fact, as I'll explain in a moment, it's the unique indecomposable tilting module with highest weight lambda. And it has the Wahl module as a submodule, and it maps subjectively onto the dual Wahl module. So so as I said, quite a lot is known in this category. So for instance, the characters of the simple modules. Unknown. So this is the quantum Lustig conjecture. So it's known in terms of the Kasten-Lustig polynomials, as was proved by Kasten and Lustig, combined with work of Kashiwara Tanizaki. So maybe I should write these, some of these names here, Kasten Lustig, then Kashiwara Tanizaki. And then I, as you would also like to point out, that there's a more recent proof by Peter Piebig, which avoids some of, would make a shortcut of part of the argument. So, so anyway, the characters are known, and this is with only a very very mild restriction on L. So, basically, for any L or layer, we can get these irreducible characters. and in fact, the same thing can be said about the characters of the quantum tilting modules. They're also known. So in addition to all this, you should add the name Circle here, because he was the one who found the characters of the tilting modules, again by some Kasten-Lustig polynomials and considerations of that sort. But it's not it's not true that the knowledge up here will imply this. It's certainly a harder problem, whereas you can go the other way. On L, did I not? No. Good point. So L is the order of Q, the order of my root of unity. Thank you. So today I'll actually let me record this here. I want L to be bigger than the Coxeter number today, and also I want L to be odd, just for convenience. And this is certainly much more than what's needed for these two character formulas. while I'm at things I have forgotten, I should certainly point out also that everything I'm saying today is joint work with Masaharu Kaneda from Osaka. All right. So the characters of these modules are unknown. So what I want to discuss today is how to say more about the structure of these modules. So we know how the characters of the tilting modules can be described, but how do the modules look like? And this is where the word rigidity comes in. So let me make sure that we agree what a rigid module is. So let's take a module in our category, and let's call it a rigid if it has a unique Loewy series. So I need two more pieces of notation to finish this definition. If I have my module or layer, I can define the radical of M to be the smallest submodule such that M modulo the radical of M is semi-simple. It's a direct sum of simple modules. So one particular feature of the representation theory in this root of unity case is that the module category is certainly not semi-simple, so that's why the problem I'm talking about has some content, because the modules certainly do not split. So we can define the radical, and once we have done this, we can keep going. We can then take rad 2 of M to be the radical of the radical, and so on. and we could sort of do the opposite thing, namely starting from below. So let me see if I can fit this in here as well. The circle of a module is the largest semi-simple submodule of M. And now you continue. You take the second circle of M is the pre-emit, let's say pi inverse of the circle of M mod sub M. You factor out the largest semi-simple submodule, and you take the largest semi-simple submodule of that and pull it back to M. And then you keep going. So the word rigid means that the radical series coincides with the circle series. So this is certainly a property that a module may or may not have. It's not true for all modules, of course, that they will be rigid. Of course, many examples of rigid modules, like semi-simple modules. Certainly, if my module breaks up, there's just, well, the circle is everything, the radical is zero, so we are, everything is clear. Also, if you have, for instance, a unimodular module, and by this I mean a module where when you take the radical series, you just get one simple module in each step, then that does have to agree with the circle series. If you work a little with this, you see that the length of these filtrations you get this way, starting from above or from below, you always get the same length, and so on. So what it means to be rigid is basically that you can only form such a sequence in one way. You don't have much freedom. If you want to see an example of a module which is not rigid, maybe the easiest example to give is, say, you take a simple module, and then you take another module which is built of two, an extension of two simples. Now, if you take the radical of this one, it will be just the double prime, whereas the circle will be consisting of those two. And so this one is not rigid. And in general, if you have a module, and if somewhere inside the module a situation like this occurs, then it's not rigid. Right. So maybe I also should explain another word in the title, namely the tilting modules. They may not be familiar to everyone. So what is these TQ lambdas? So another important definition is the following for this talk. If I have a module in CQ, I call it tilting. if it has a delta and a Knappler filtration. So what this means is that I have such a filtration of submodules. If we're talking about a delta filtration. I have submodules like this with Fi mod Fi minus 1 isomorphic to delta of some weight, say lambda I delta Q. I think I decided to try to keep the Q, reminding us that we are in a quantum situation. So if we can make such a filtration exist, then it has we say that it has a delta filtration, and then of course you can guess what I mean by saying it has a Nadler filtration. So a tilting module, we insist that it has both kinds of filtrations, and it turns out that that you can then characterize these tilting modules. So there's a theorem due to Ringel in a somewhat more general context, and Duncan worked it out completely in cases covering our situation here. The theorem says that, well, it says two things. It says, first of all, that if you have a lambda in X plus, then you can find, like, exist even a unique module TQ lambda, which is indecomposable, and has lambda as highest weight. I guess I should be even more precise and say lambda occurs with multiplicity 1. All other weights are strictly smaller than lambda. So such a indecomposable and tilting. And the second part says that if you have a tilting module, well, then it breaks into indecomposable ones. So basically, the second part here says that any indecomposable tilting is of the form TQ lambda for some lambda. Right. So I guess now I can state sort of the main result that we were after, which again has two parts. The first part says that if lambda is L regular, so to be L regular means that if I look at lambda plus rho alpha check, so rho is, as usual, half the sum of the positive roots. All these integers here, alpha is a root, are not divisible by L. So take a root, say alpha, and look at all these numbers. They should not be divisible by L. Then we say the lambda is L regular. I want one more condition on lambda. I want lambda minus L rho to be dominant. So this means that not only is lambda dominant, it's in some sense very dominant, it's not too close to the walls. If I have these conditions on lambda, then TQ lambda is rigid. The second part says that the same is true about the Laval modules, except that we are not completely sure what should be the right condition on lambda. So here, lambda again certainly should be L regular. And then we need, at the moment, we need lambda minus some unspecified n times the rho to be dominant. And so we don't really know what, we think the same condition should actually be L here, but we can't prove this at the moment, so let me just put it like this. If you have this, then Knappler Q lambda is also rigid. So these are the results I want to say a little more about, and maybe I want to start to by illustrating this result in some examples. So the dominant chamber. Let's make a drawing of some dominant chamber for some system. So it's a cone like this, and to say that lambda minus L rho is regular. So L rho sits somewhere in this chamber, and then the the lambdas described by the first condition are L regular ones sitting above this point. Now this point is a rather special one, or rather the one right below it. So in fact, I want to look at the weight L minus one rho. This is the quantum Steinberg weight. It has the following property: if you look at our four modules in this particular case, if lambda is this, then this whole picture collapses and gives us just one module, the simple module equals the Weyl module equals the dual Weyl module equals the tilting module in this for this particular weight. So if you believe this middle equality, then you will certainly believe the last equality, because if these two, if the delta and the Knappler are equal, well then this module certainly has a delta and a Knappler filtration, so it must be equal to the T. And it's also easy to see that if we have less equality, then the first one comes. So for this doesn't happen very often, but it does happen for this Steinberg module, and it implies so this equality here is a consequence of the linkage principle, the quantum linkage principle. And it I want to give this module the name ST, the Steinberg module, maybe STL or STQ. So it's a very special module, and a consequence of in particular is that it's projective. As well as injective, if you prefer this. In CQ. So what about those weights occurring in one over there? I claim that the tilting modules we're talking about are in fact all projective and injective. So that I could also, in fact, state one as saying that all indecomposable projective modules in my category, corresponding to regular weights, are all rigid. So why is this so? If I take a lambda such that this one is in X plus, then I can certainly write lambda as L minus one rho plus something dominant. So I can then look at the Le Steinberg module, which I had earlier, which was projective. I could form this tensor product. Take the TQ lambda prime. Then I get a module, and the highest weight will be the sum of the two highest weights. So that's L minus one rho plus lambda prime. So it has highest weight lambda. And it's also tilting. And this highest weight occurs with multiplicity one as well. It's tilting. And this is now coming from a general result saying that this property of being tilting is closed on a tensor product. So if you have two tilting modules and tensor them together, you get again a tilting module. This is not a trivial result, but it's a true result. So we have a tilting module here, and now we decompose it into indecomposables. And since this lambda is the highest weight, certainly the TQ lambda will divide this, will be one of the summands. Will be a unique summand of this one, where the highest weight is lambda, and this is TQ lambda. And since Le Steinberg was projective, certainly this direct summand of this tensor product will again be projective. So this certainly has some consequence for when we want now. What we want to do is, in fact, we want to construct a radical filtration and a circle filtration of Lees. And now at least we have a start because now we have a projective indecomposable module. So it must be the projective cover of some simple module or the injective hull of some ones. And so there's an LQ, say lambda tilde, sitting inside. There's a unique one sitting inside, which is now the circle. And it turns out that if you look a little bit about the weights, the very same simple module would sit on top. So we can now start our process of constructing the circle and the radical filtrations of these modules. But of course, there's a lot in between. So let me point out that there's a good reason why we make some assumption here in the theorem. I don't really know about this L-regular. In fact, I have a suspicion that might not be so necessary. But the second condition certainly is, and I want to give a specific counterexample if this condition is not met. So I want to take type B2. And let's again make a drawing of the dominant chamber. And let's start dividing it into alcoves. So what I'm drawing now are these lines where weights are not regular. So these are the lines described by, so say this line, for instance. Well, first of all, the main lines here. These are the lines where, say, lambda alpha plus rho is zero here. And this one, let's now take the other simple root. Then the inner product is L. And then you take a corresponding line where the inner product is 2L, and you keep going like this. Then you get your dominant chamber divided into small triangles called alcoves. So let's first look at the fundamental box. These four alcoves constitute what's called the fundamental box. The Steinberg weight is the top point here. So here we have the L minus one row. Now, so we simply started by brute force to try to compute these tilting modules, and as I described, we certainly know their characters, so we can compute their composition factors and so on. And it happened that everything is rigid when we start out, until we get to this. Let's see, alcove number 8 here. So. Let me call it TQA, take a regular one, take a weight inside this alcove here. This happens to be non-rigid. And in fact, also the ball module is also non-rigid there. So, I mean, it's pretty close to to this area where we prove the theorem. We're just slightly outside, then things do go wrong for this case. And I must say that, I mean, just to compute this example, we sort of need everything we know and all possible ad hoc arguments we could come up with to check that this is indeed so. In this B2 case, if you compute the TQ lambdas up here, they'll have somewhere between 160. No. Yes, 160. I think that's right, and 640 composition factors. So I mean, it's there are plenty of things that could possibly go wrong, and it's to me some little bit of a miracle that in fact there's only one way of constructing this Loewy series in this case. And I don't really understand why it goes wrong, but it certainly does out here. And as I said, at the moment our condition on in the second part, we cannot quite prove it in even in this B2 case. I don't think we can prove it in the full range here. But if we get far enough inside there, we can sort of deduce it from this one. So even though this The tilting modules are the bigger modules. They are the ones that that we can handle in the biggest generality. Okay, so maybe point out one thing that you do have to compute to get started is the Loewy lengths. So so when you fiddle around with these radical series and circle series, you, as I said, you realize they have the same lengths. So the Loewy lengths of a module is this common number. So it's the minimum of those I such that the radical is zero. So certainly when you compute these radicals, since we're dealing with finite dimensional modules, sooner or later we hit zero. We could also start from below, and then I guess it will be the maximum of those I's such that the circle, the I's circle is everything. The claim is, I guess, as part of the theorem, maybe that the Loewy lengths of the TQ lambda is 2n plus 1. So, same condition as in 1 in the theorem. The Loewy lengths is 2 times n plus 1. N here is the number of positive roots. And the Loewy lengths of the Nappler is n plus 1. Now, maybe to illustrate how to work with these Loewy lengths, let me write down a little lemma, which is sort of fun to prove. So this is now for a completely general lambda. Let's maybe call it mu n. So I take any mu in x plus now. Then I claim that the Loewy lengths of the corresponding indecomposable tilting is always bigger than or equal to twice the Loewy lengths of the Wahl module minus 1. Yes, I think it's minus 1. Let me give an outline of the proof. That's not difficult, because as we saw, the Knappler Q mu is sitting inside T Q mu. So we could try to see which radical layers, which radical submodule does it belong to. So let's choose I maximal such that Knappler Q of mu is contained in the I's radical. So it's contained in there, but it's not contained in the next one. So these radicals become smaller and smaller. Now, if it sits inside there, this must mean that if you look at the quotient, then mu is not a weight anymore, because mu occurs once as weight here, and now it also occurs in the delta. So in the quotient, it does not occur. So this means that I guess I didn't want that. I wanted probably to take the next radical module and say, now I still have a surjection from here onto the Knappler. So if I took the next one, then delta Q of mu is not contained in there. Therefore, mu cannot be a weight anymore in the submodule. Hence, it must be a weight here. Now, if it's not a weight in the submodule, this submodule will map to zero over here. So do I still have my... No, I don't. So the point is that I have a submodule and a quotient, which is the dual. And mu occurring once means that the composite of this inclusion and this surjection must be non-zero. Because this being an injection, this means that I do hit the mu weight space here, and also the surjection maps onto the mu weight space. So the composite is a non-zero map. Now this the map, the surjection will kill the submodule, so I have this thing here. Now this means that the Loewy lengths of this one is certainly smaller than or equal to whatever the Loewy lengths of this is, but this is by definition is I plus 1. And I have divided out the I plus first radical, so I certainly have a module of Loewy lengths I plus 1. On the other hand, this inclusion here means that the Loewy lengths of delta Q mu is smaller than or equal to the Loewy lengths here. Well, what's the Loewy lengths here? It's the Loewy lengths of T Q mu minus I. I have chopped off the I first part. And now if these two modules are a dual to each other. So if you combine these two inequalities, you you get this statement of the lemma. Right. So this is one start to or one way to get started in proving something about the Loewi series. You you do need to know the Loewi lengths. We still only have an inequality. So I want to state a result which gives us an inequality the other way around. And this is a consequence of the Lustig conjecture again. So the point is that if you take a module in your category and you apply a wall crossing functor, so let me explain afterwards what this means. Let me just write it down. The Loewi lengths of M, which you wall cross, is less than or equal to the Loewi lengths of M plus 2. So what is this wall crossing? So let's suppose we have two alcoves. You want to cross from one alcove into the next one. You can do this by a wall crossing functor, first by picking a weight on the wall. Then there's a translation functor, T lambda mu is translation from lambda to mu. So without writing down exactly what it is, let me remind you that what you do is you tensor your module by a certain finite dimensional module with specified highest weight corresponding to the difference between mu and lambda. And then you project onto the corresponding block. That gives you a translation functor. And now the wall crossing is simply first doing this and then translating back again from mu to lambda. This we call wall crossing. And then to make sense of my theorem, I believe I should say M belongs to CQ lambda, the lambda block in CQ. So this means that a module in this block is characterized by having all its composition factors with weights in the affine wild group dotted onto lambda. Then you can wall cross it, and you get this statement. As I said, this is a consequence of the Kasten-Lustig conjecture. At least if you take M to be simple, so let's apply it to a simple module LQ lambda. Then it says that the wall crossed simple module has Loewi lengths at most 3. Well, this is sometimes called the Vogon conjecture, that if you apply theta s to a simple module, then sometimes you get 0. In other cases, what you get is a module with a simple head and a simple circle, and then something semi-simple in the middle. So this is this description of the wall-crossed simple module in this situation. That's sometimes called the Vogon conjecture, and was proved to be equivalent to the Kasten-Lustig conjecture. So first in the category O, but the same, basically the same sort of arguments works in this quantum situation as well. So the theorem here is well, a little extension of this one. It was proved a long time ago by Irving in the category O case. And again, the same proof basically works. So so how can we use this in our situation to say something about the tilting modules? Well, we can do this. So we want to still maybe have this picture in mind that you want to prove something in a range here. And now, suppose you start. I want to make up some induction, so I want to start at the bottom alcove and then may make my way up. Let me try to argue for the induction step first. So suppose you find some alcove here. You want to prove it there. And you have proved it for all small alcoves. Also, so there's an alcove, an adjacent alcove just below it. So now you have your lambda here, and let's say you have lambda prime in the alcove just below it. So you already know that the length of TQ lambda prime is less than is equal to 2n plus 1. Right, then you apply wall crossing. So we look at theta s tq lambda prime. And even though I didn't say exactly what translation is, I said, well, you tensor by some small module. You can very well choose the small module to be a tilting module, so that the effect of using translation is you get a new tilting module. So whatever this is again a tilting module, and then you look at what could its highest weight be, and you'll see that lambda is the unique highest weight of this one. So again, TQ lambda is some summand in there. Aha. So hence its Loewy length is certainly less than the Loewy length of TQ lambda prime plus 2. No, that's not what I wanted to say. I wanted to keep the theta s here. Since it's a summand, the Loewy length is certainly smaller than or equal to. Now I could apply my the result over here and say, well, then you get the Loewy length plus 2, but that's not good enough. Then length grows, and it shouldn't. But then I use the fact that I do know that the TQ lambda prime has a simple head and a simple circle. And if you look at the head and the circle, you are in a lucky situation that this simple module, which I called LQ lambda prime tilde, that's one of the cases where you get a zero. I mean, you do know exactly when you get zero when you don't. And if you look at a situation like this, then the head on the circle is killed. So instead of translating the TQ lambda prime, you might as well have just chopped off the head and the circle and translated the middle instead. And now you can use the result over here and say, well, now this is less than the length here is 2n minus 1, and now when you add the 2, you get what you want. Well, you get now an inequality. The Loewy length here is smaller than or equal to that number. To get the equality, we want to establish that the delta Q lambda has Loewy lengths n plus 1, because then we would have both. So So that's a similar argument where, again, you you use that wall crossing if to go from one outcrop to the next, and you sort of reduce everything to the first outcrop in the picture there. And now how do you handle this one? Now you need a completely different argument. Well, maybe I don't have much time to really say. So let me maybe try to do a little drawing here and a hand waving and so on. The point is that you let's now pick let's pick a new letter. This time, new belongs to this this bottom box where we want to get our start of our induction. What I want to do here is I want to look at, I think probably I want to look at the dual vowel module here. And now there's always a map from a vowel module into the neighboring the vowel module sitting in the neighboring outcrop. So in this case, if this is new and I say go around this way, then I do have maps. Like this, all the way down, and in the DNL case, you will have capital N such maps. Now, these dual vowel modules have a simple circle, and since the weights decreases, this simple circle, which has highest weight nu, will not occur over here. So the map, all the maps kill the circle of the modules. So this means that if you look at the image, the Loewy length of the image must be strictly smaller than where you started. So the Loewy length of the image of the first map is strictly smaller than this one. When you get to here, the image of the composite has Loewy length at least 2 less than where you started. So you subtract altogether capital N, and now you just have to convince yourself that the big composite here, the composite of them all, is does indeed hit is just a simple module. So the composite takes this Knappler Q of nu onto a simple module. Then you get the estimate that Knappler Q of nu is smaller than N plus 1. N because you have capital N steps, and 1 because the image, the total image, is a simple module. Okay, now you take this and you combine it again with this theorem to get the and the lemma to get the equality in the starting position. So instead of saying more about this, let me just use the remaining time to say that that in fact we would like, first of all, we would certainly like to know exactly what are the right conditions. So this is work in progress. But we would also like to do the same thing in the modular case. So let me just say a few words about what happens if you, instead of the quantum group, you now take a semi-simple algebraic group. and you take it over a field of characteristic P, bigger than zero, in fact bigger than the Coxeter number for my purposes here. And then you have a completely similar situation where whenever you take a dominant weight, you have a simple module. Now I shouldn't write Q anymore. Now I'm in the classical case. You have a vowel module, a dual vowel module, and a tilting module, and so on. So everything works completely the same, except that in this situation we no longer have the available a character formula for Lie lambda. The Lustig conjecture is only known for very large primes. And even if you're willing to say, well, let's look at the very large primes, the tilting modules, we don't know at all the character of T lambda. It's a big mystery. No one has even formulated a conjecture about Lie's. So what to do about Lie's? Well, we cannot do much, but at least we can we wanted to compare the quantum and this modular case just to see, well, what is the difference and so on. So what we what we assume is that we cannot really do much if we don't know the character of the simple modules. So let's assume this. So maybe assume that P is very large, or that you have some group where this is known. Then we try to attack these very mysterious things. We cannot compute the character. So how on earth should we compute the structure? Well, it turns out we can still do a little bit. What we can prove is maybe since my time is more or less up, let me maybe go here and just put down the theorem corrections here. So now I replace L by P. So that's my condition. I should remove also the Q. We cannot prove this. In fact, this is false. I need a third condition now. So maybe I should, forget this. I need also an upper limit on lambda. So I need that lambda plus rho alpha check is less than t times p minus h plus 2 for lambda alpha in r plus. So I have to add this upper condition. Otherwise, it's simply false. But if I do have Lie's, then we can still prove Lie's, as well as some variation of two, where again we are a little bit uncertain what should be the right condition. But let me point out that we do need Lie's condition, and this was one starting point of Lie's work was. There was a recent paper by Doty, Steve Doty and Stuart Martin. They looked at SL3. Okay, so the case where G is SL3. And they looked at characteristic 2 and 3. So characteristic could be 2 and 3, and then they said, well, they would consider the remaining primes later in a later paper. What they did in these two characteristics were they looked at the simple modules and formed their tensor products. So this was for lambda and mu restricted weights. So this means they belong to this fundamental box that I had at some point. So in this picture here, if this is SL3, there are just two alcoves in my fundamental box, and they wanted to describe the structure of Lie's tensor products. Now, if you are in the bottom alcove, then the L lambdas are also tilting modules. So, in fact, when you tensor them together, you get a new tilting modules, and hence you can decompose. In this SL3 case, we do happen to know the character of the tilting modules. But if you are if one of your modules is in the upper alcove, then you are not tilting anymore, and some new phenomena occurs. And what they said, they had some remarks saying that they couldn't work out the complete structure, and they believed some of Lie's tensor products to involve some ends which were not rigid. So what we then observed that by our methods we could, if we took a very special highest weight. Look at so still for SL3, look at the highest weight p times p minus 1 over 2 times rho. So this is just slightly outside this range. The h for SL3 is 3, so here we have p minus 1, and if you compute it for this one, it's p plus 1. So it's just outside more or less this range. But this one we can prove is non-rigid. So in the characteristic tree case, this was one of the summands that they came up with. And what we can prove is that this has nothing to do with characteristic tree. It really works for all odd characteristics. And so something new is happening in this modular case, which you do not see in the quantum case. And so it's still a big challenge to figure out exactly what is happening in that case. Thanks for your attention.
Thank you very much. Are there questions, comments?
Is this rigidity results for the tilting modules in the quantum case equivalent to Lustig's character formula?
Yes, we can certainly formulate a statement which says you do not need. I don't see exactly how to get it from the rigidity of the tilting modules, but as a tool in our proof, we wall cross a Wahl module and check that the wall crossed Wahl module is rigid, and this statement is equivalent to the Lustig conjecture. If whenever you have a Wahl module and you wall cross it, that you get something. In fact, what we can see is that if you can just prove that the Loewy length is what it should be, then we can derive the Lustig conjecture. Yes.
Other questions? Then let's thank the speaker again.